You know what they say, a glass of milk a day keeps the assassins away. Or maybe the DEA?
Who's to say?
There's a new nursery. Who's to say? New little nursery rhyme for you, pending here at the Swamp. Honestly, this episode's going to be kind of cracked, like, and not in a good way. Like, this episode's going to be kind of heavy. So, but introduce the show. Hi, hello, we're the Swamp. This is our podcast. It's an acronym.
Stays for some whack-ass movie podcasting. And this week, we were trying to, I mean, start rounding off introducing month, which is actors' first appearances. And so we said, you know what's iconic? Natalie Portman in Leon the Professional. Neither of us had seen it.
No, I had seen it. I fully...
Oh, you had?
So I had seen what we'll get into, but I had seen the American version, the uncut, non... I'd seen the normal version.
Well, yes.
That a lot of people really
I would assume that if you had seen the extended version, you wouldn't have said yes to doing this.
No, well, so yeah, I think I had originally recommended it because I had seen it. I liked it. I think it's she does a great performance. It's a really notable first performance for an actress. I do want to say...
Yeah, 13 years old.
The theme of this month is slowly shifting, or not so slowly shifting, from first appearances to... It's just fucking Bob month, bro.
I was about to say.
It is the severe, like, next week we might as well just redo The Incredibles to round it out with Edna Mode. Because the Bobbage has been bobbing this whole month. I would say, like, kind of a stretch to say that Maggie Gyllenhaal's character in Monster House from last week had kind of a fucked up bob, but I would say she did.
It's something strange, yes. I would agree with you there. That's a whole character in itself.
But, yeah, to jump in a little bit, I want to do some disclaimers, because I want to get better at sort of... At the top of the episode, if you know this movie, you might know a little bit about it, but I think both of us actually learned quite a bit this week, and this is, like, kind of...
A lot.
This might be more educational than our show typically is, but there are two versions of this movie that I would say have very different vibes. And it's just, it's 20 minutes of footage that they include in the director's cut or the international version. I do believe there's some discrepancy over, like, sometimes the movie is just called Leon, sometimes the movie is just called The Professional, and then sometimes the movie is called Leon the Professional. Like, I think the title, reflects which edit you're getting. I don't really know. But we both watched the international director's extended cut for the purposes of this podcast, and and we're going to get into... some topics regarding, like, the sexualization of a 12-year-old.
Minors,
Like, pedophilia. Like, I know, you know, censor the word so we don't get demonetized, but we don't make any money from this anyway, so I can say whatever words I want.
Whatever.
So, like, pedophilia and, like, things that, not just things that happen in fiction, but, like, things that happen to real people in real life.
Yeah.
Is, like, sort of a Harvey Weinstein, but, you know, we're mixing some minors in there type situation. But, I just wanted everyone to know at the top, if that's the kind of stuff makes you feel icky or, like, really uncomfortable, as it should, but if you don't want to listen to that and you don't give a fuck about this movie, just move on. Go listen to one of our old episodes or something. But if you didn't know, I fully did not know that this movie, this alternate version, and this truism about it, about this director and his life, really surprised me. So I think that this movie is something that not a lot of people know is actually fucked.
Well, yeah.
This movie's fucked.
Considering that this movie has a 4.0 on Letterboxd, and I think movie people and movie Twitter are... I think movies people can be disgusting, but I don't think people on Letterboxd are disgusting. You're just nerds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For the most part, at least. But yeah, I think a lot
for the most part,
As I was scrolling through Letterboxd, I think it's so obvious which users saw which version, because so many people are writing really earnest reviews, and I really liked the original when I had first seen it. I didn't really think anything of it. But to sort of do a bit of a discrepancy for those at home who may not know, the original movie is basically... Natalie Portman, she comes from, like, kind of a messy family. Her dad is, like, working with this fucked up DEA agent played by Gary Oldman, who's basically, like, using this guy to store drugs. He's, like, a corrupt, he's, like, in the drug ring, but he's also in the DEA type of guy. And basically, he tries to...
Double agent.
He tries to scam them, and he gets caught. So then Gary Oldman and his goons come up and fucking kill everyone in their whole family. But Natalie Portman, Matilda, she's out getting groceries, so she doesn't get killed. And she comes in, sees the scene, and goes to her neighbor's apartment, and that's Jean Reno playing
Leon,
who is a hitman, and he just sort of takes her in that moment, because he's like, holy fuck, like, I just heard that whole girl's whole fucking family get gunned down.
Yeah.
So he takes her in, and she very quickly is like, I want you to teach me how to be a hitman, so that I can get revenge on these guys who hurt my family. And then there's this sort of long stretch of, like, him teaching her about guns and her, you know, really begging him to show her the ropes and him being kind of hesitant. But also he's this very, like, lonely, reclusive man.
Italian man.
Shut the fuck up. Like, absolutely in no world is that guy Italian. That is a...
No.
That is French man.
That's a French dude. That's what I thought when I first started watching this. I was like, oh, of course he's French. And then pops up...
Danny Aiello,
Sal's
right?
Sal's Pizza, yeah.
He, like, goes to Little Italy to, like, get his jobs. And I'm like, in what fucking world? Absolutely not.
No, that is a French man if I've ever seen one.
But there is, in the original, there is some, like, you know, tension between young Natalie Portman continually sort of making these passes at Leon, who's, like, a literal 45-year-old man. And she's just sort of like, I think I'm in love with you. And he's like, well, you're a child and you don't know what love is. And she's sort of like, well, whatever. And that's about...
Well, fuck me.
That's about...
Actually, no, fuck me, please. She asks him to have sex with her.
Well, not in the original. So not in the... In the
oh, no, not in the original. So, well, I would consider the extended cut the original.
To be the original, personally. Yeah. I guess I'll say...
Yes.
I'll say the American and then the international...
Extended,
versions,
yeah.
...versions, I guess will be how I'll say it. Because, like, right now, the one that's on Netflix that you can watch, that's the quote-unquote American one.
American version. Which is what most people know.
Yeah. But so she sort of has these complicated feelings about this man. It's sort of like, is it a father figure? Is she interested in him? But she's a young girl, and it's very much portrayed as, like, her whole family just died. She's very confused. She's very lost, and she's maybe, you know, projecting some sort of things onto him. She also is, like, dressed kind of adultish, but it's very clear that she's trying to behave older than she is. She's 12.
Yeah.
She constantly says she's 18, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's, in my opinion, in the American version, it's never, like, super overtly, in the context of the movie, never super overtly, like, pedophilic or gross, other than that they do just sexualize young Natalie Portman a little bit in the in the costuming and in the way they make her kind of act a little bit.
Yes.
But I think that could sort of be brushed as, like, she comes from a rough household. She was, you know, like, her upbringing was probably not super stable. She just probably emulating the people around her. Like, that could be an excuse for it.
Yeah, thinking back to, like, who her mother was and how she was portrayed, like, it would make sense. Yeah. But I was shocked to even see that there was this little, and this was probably the worst of it in the American version, which I understand why people would just brush it off if this was the worst of it. This kind of, like, she wanted to play a game with Leon.
Yes.
Where it's like they were playing dress up and she had to, like, you had to figure out who the other person was portraying. And she comes out as Madonna in a bra and, like, and singing Like a Virgin, and then goes to Marilyn Monroe doing the sexy happy birthday to JFK, which is, personally, I thought bad enough. And that's where it starts when you watch the international version, too. So I was like, okay, that's, like, pretty uncomfortable, but, like, not anything crazy. So if you watch the American version, I can see how you kind of skirt off of that, because that's, like, first 40 minutes and it's done. the international version just goes so downhill so fast.
Yeah. I'll say, so, like, for those who've only seen the American version and, like, really like this movie or think highly of it and just didn't know any different, I will kind of be on the defense. Like, not that this movie is good, because it's not, it's fucked, but on the defense of people who didn't know better, I can see, I can see how that scene in particular, she comes out very over-sexualized, the camera angles are very uncomfortable. But to me, the first time watching it, I was like, oh, we're supposed to feel uncomfortable because that's how Leon is feeling. He's an adult man being like, I'm in this weird new, like, father-daughter pseudo relationship and she wants to play this game and, like, this will make me feel weird, but I'm not a dad. I don't know what the fuck to say. Like, right? That kind of made a little bit of sense to me. The sexualization of her in that way, I was like, kind of made sense in the plot until, so basically the movie ends with Matilda goes off on her own to try to kill all the guys. They catch her. The whole DEA comes in basically and does a whole raid and they get Leon and Matilda escapes and she goes to a boarding school and is going to restart her life over and Leon dies and that's kind of the end. But so in the extended version, I think, you said it as a good point that that is sort of like a turning point where once you know, you start to get the ick, it really continues to solidify itself as being very intentionally gross and not for the purposes of driving the plot because this movie is made by a pedophile. So, what's his name? Luc Besson. I'm going to say Besson because I'm an American, but I'm sure it's Besson.
I want to well, I would also love to disrespect him because I think he's disgusting.
Of his IMDb, the only other thing that I think I've really seen of him is that fuck-ass movie Lucy, which we saw together. We were
14 years old and so... we saw that movie, like, really stoned, and I feel like we came down as the movie went on, and it was still bad as it was when I was stoned as to when I was sober.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the first iteration of me seeing a movie and being like, oh, wow, this is a bad movie.
Yeah. Like, yeah, even being a blasted 14-year-old couldn't save this movie, and that is a low bar. That is a low, low bar. But to a little backstory, which you had sort of keyed me into this, because you were like, hey, bro, which version did you watch? And I was like, huh?
Well, yeah.
I was like, huh? Two versions? And so you sort of gave me the down low of like, I don't think we watched the same movie, bro. So I had read your text, kind of got the down low, and then watched the international version on purpose so that we would kind of be on the same page and that I would just have both of those perspectives.
Well, yeah. And we've watched two different movies before, and it's not a great podcast. Yeah.
But so knowing what we now know, like every single little camera pan up her body just sent fucking shivers down my spine. Suddenly everything became so, like, just
gross.
So gross. And so basically the backstory is Luc Besson, he is a French director, and I know that there's some, like, age of consent law stuff in France that is, like, has been protested a lot of times because it's so low.
That doesn't shock me. I don't
know too much about it, but I know everyone, a lot of people, like, on Reddit that I was looking were, like, making excuses that it's, like, this is just a European mindset, like, that's why they cut it, Americans just don't get it. I'm like, no, it's not a European mindset if you're 35 and she's 12. Like, absolutely not. But basically what had...
If that's your European mindset, you guys need to be neutered.
Yeah, but, so basically what had happened in real life was Luc Besson, his second wife, her name is Maiwen, she's also French, and she's also an actress. She was actually in this. She is the woman who's sleeping with the mob guy at the very beginning, and she sort of slips out and is just like, see you later, babe.
Interesting, because I thought I knew her from something.
So she's an actress, she's also a director and a filmmaker over in France, but they met when she was 12 and he was 29, and then she proceeded to have his baby when she was 16, and then they got immediately married. So it's like, yeah, she had the baby when she was 16, but that does not mean that that's when they started having sex. Like, that is not okay.
No. Absolutely not.
Another thing that just, like, oh, really just, like, pushed the knife even deeper. I was looking into, like, what else she had done after they had gotten divorced and all that stuff. And I guess that she, like, directed and starred in a movie called, like, Police.
It's in French.
It's a French movie. But it's about a photographer who shadows a child protection unit that tracks down pedophiles and rescues exploited children from bad situations. So obviously this woman is not only hyper aware of the abuse that she endured, but also is like trying to educate others and like create art about it. So damn, like that whole situation, so fucked. That guy also has several other sexual abuse, misconduct, rape violation allegations against him. Like just not a chill guy by any metric.
Looking him up, I was really hoping that he was dead, but unfortunately he is alive, but I hope not well.
I had believed that Harvey Weinstein was dead for so long, and I would just say that as if it were a fact, and everyone was always like, Dara, Harvey Weinstein is not dead, he's just in prison. And I was like, no, he died in jail. And everyone's like, no, he didn't. And I was like, well, it's true to me.
You could have told me that. I think we've definitely had the debate before on the podcast as well, because I was like, is she right?
I actually do think I had to, like, retroactively, like, link an article to be like, actually, I said he was dead, and that is not true.
You just say it with so much conviction that I'm like, she's gotta be right. She obviously knows what she's talking about.
Because he should be. Yeah. And also, to get people who are fucked out of the way, Gary Oldman, this is more...
Yeah, I don't know enough about the whole thing with Gary Oldman, but you've definitely told me.
Yeah, I mean, so somebody recently told me that I need to start using the word allegedly more on this podcast, because they were like, you're gonna get sued for libel continuing to say that Eddie Murphy is a murderer. He's an alleged murderer. And I was like, girl, I'll say whatever I want. Like again, who's gonna sue me? Who's gonna demonetize me? But allegedly, Gary Oldman, his ex-wife, you know, accused him of having both emotionally and physically, you know, abused her throughout their marriage. There were never any charges actually brought upon him. And then he was given custody of their children.
Wow.
Amidst that. That's all I know about that situation. I don't really know anything
I don't know enough about that, but I tend to believe women. And with the way he played this character, it wouldn't shock me that he could tap into that in his home.
So the thing, though, that we, not alleged, he did say, so we do know if you know, woman abuser allegations, being a shitty person, confirmed, he, in an interview, he defended Mel Gibson for being a anti-Semitic racist piece of shit, basically, and he was like, everyone is so PC nowadays, and everyone's like, Gary Oldman, it's 2014, come on, get with the times, buddy. And he also publicly said that 12 Years a Slave only won Best Picture at the Oscars because everyone was afraid to not vote for it in fear of looking racist. Ugh, not a cute thing to say, buddy. So, Gary Oldman, I'm not a fan. I also think he was hamming it up a little too much for me.
Yeah.
In this role. Why? What were those pills that he was taking? I know it was implied that he, you know, was a drug user and a drug pusher, as well as being a DEA guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It was probably just some fake shit that, you know, speed...
But he would take these pills and crack immediately them crack it and immediately just come. Like, what is the pill that makes you bust a nut on the spot is what he was doing. And he would like shiver and his body like turn into Jim Carrey for like just a second.
Yeah.
And then lock back in.
Yeah, it makes you come while it gives you adrenaline. Your dick doesn't know what to do, so it just
But yeah, Gary Oldman didn't really do it for me in this. I thought he was like hamming it up a little bit too much. I also think that his character was just very much there, like in the beginning and in the end, and we didn't really get enough of him throughout for me to like really give a shit.
Right? Show me the other stuff that he's doing besides fucking with this kid and this dude.
Yeah, I don't know. Give me more of a reason to care.
What did you think of, I don't know the guy's name that actually played Leon.
Oh, Jean Reno.
Yeah.
The Frenchest name that you could possibly imagine. Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought that I read somewhere that he pretty actively made the acting decision to try to make Leon a little slower or a little more disconnected. That way, yeah, him rejecting Matilda's advances seemed a little more like he's just sort of this blank wall, uninterested, yeah, kind of a thing, which I think was, you know, smart and good on him as, yeah, an actor to recognize that situation and be like, oh, if I play him up as a really cool and suave guy that is, like, very charismatic, mm-hmm, and stuff, like, him turning her down isn't gonna seem super real. He's like, so he has to be kind, yeah, of, like, this
a little
emotionless,
blank,
yeah, yeah, kind of guy. But I thought it was a good performance.
Yeah.
I think the two of them together were a really great, mm-hmm, dynamic. It's just a bummer that they had to kind of fucking ruin it by being creepy about it. Because in the original, I always remembered thinking that it was this cool and fun thing, right? Like he's the sort of stoic, lonely assassin, mm-hmm, and she's this, like, girl who's looking, like, desperately looking for a place to belong in the world. And it's just, yeah, like, sort of they find each other. And there are a lot of scenes that, like, do feel very right and correct and make this movie, mm-hmm, like, feel like it's on its way to be something really good. But the handful of scenes that are in the international version that are not,
yeah,
in the American version are a series where they do a practice hit where Matilda goes and she practices, you know, running the scam with, like, fake bullets a bunch of times. Yeah. And then he takes her out to dinner to sort of celebrate. And she's, yeah, drinking a lot of champagne. And she at one point tries to, like, climb across the table to, like, kiss him or go at him.
Yeah.
And he's, like, obviously been made kind of uncomfortable by this and is trying to kind of keep her tame. But it's, like, this very wildly inappropriate, like, them drinking champagne in this, like, elegant, mm-hmm, setting. And then it sort of ramps up again where he gives her this dress. And we see him gift her the dress in the American version, but we do not get the secondary scene where, mm-hmm, she then tries on the dress for him. And, like, it's this sort of charged situation where she, like, asks him to take her virginity, and he's like, no.
Bro, what the fuck? Yeah.
He's like, no, that's not okay. And she goes on this tangent of, like, you know, everyone says their first time is uncomfortable and not special, and I, uh-huh, want it to be with someone who I know would really take good care of me, and I think that should be you. And he's kind of like, no, I don't think that's a good idea. I think you, yeah, just think that, but that's not a good idea. Uh-huh. And then she's like, but we just need to sleep in this bed together, basically. So she's
so
like,
they, yeah. So they do that, which is, again, weird and strange. There's also this one scene where she's threatening to shoot herself playing Russian roulette with him.
Yes.
Because she's like, if you won't love me, then life's not worth living, basically. Yep. And there, yep, was a bullet in the chamber. Like, she would have died, but he, yeah, obviously, you know, stops her. Yeah, and then it's also like he opens up to her and tells her why he went to New York when he was 19, mm-hmm, which, yeah, I think they could have just cut that out. I remember looking at a lot of people's reviews of this movie, and a lot of people cited this as, like, one of those movies they watched when they were really young, and it feels like it tuned them into, like, how movies could be cool and fun. Maybe this is a hot take. Besides all the other fucked shit about this movie, I thought the editing was really bad.
I don't know. I didn't really have a thought about the editing per se. I do think that this movie is very stylish. It has some very cool shots, a lot of great,
absolutely,
blocking, good cinematography, very cool costumes. Both of our main characters are very, very stylish in that, like, early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s way. I could see how it could kind of be grabbed onto as an aesthetic rather than an actual, like, good,
yeah,
piece of media. And the thing that comes to mind specifically for this is, like, Lolita, right? Like, the Lolitaification of girls who want to do, like, the coquette core. I mean, that's, like, what,
yeah,
we call it now. But, like, the whole Lolita, Lana Del Rey aesthetic, right? Of, like, we take,
yeah,
the fashion and we take the art and the visuals from it, but we aren't actually thinking about, like, what that piece of media is truly,
uh-huh,
about, right? So,
yeah,
I could see how a lot of people could watch this movie and be like, oh, so cool, assassin, cool costumes, looks,
uh-huh,
nice, I love this, movies are awesome, without being like, there's something a little off here.
Yeah.
And again, just fundamentally, it's just kind of, like, some of the action sequences are kind of cool, but it's just, I think that it really happened to hit a home run with some, like, very cool shots and cool styling, and that sort of eats everything else up. I made a list of people who need to go to jail.
Okay.
I had a running list. And so, obviously, as we've discussed, the director, jail. Natalie Portman's parents or agent or whoever was in charge of, like, keeping an eye on her.
I get it. I get it. It's a big break movie, but you read the entire script. You read that whole thing.
The entire script, which included originally a scene before it got shot, they wrote in the script that she asks him to take her virginity, and he doesn't say yes, but he doesn't say no, and then she starts doing it, and he's like, why do I deserve this, basically? And she's like, and they fully do the in the script originally, and it's super gross that both Luc Besson and his ex-wife Maywen have both said that this movie was written around
about their relationship,
and originally, you know, the idea was conceptualized around the time when she was 16 and he was 30. Yep. So it's like, you can't argue that it's not creepy, because he's literally basing it off of a actual pedophilic relationship
that he's had.
He had. But the other person I put on the jail list is the music supervisor.
Why?
Okay, did you, when they were playing that fucking Venus is a Boy song by Bjork, that was like, his hands caress my body. Like, what are even, I'll Google the lyrics. Venus is a Boy by Bjork plays while Natalie Portman is doing chores around the house.
I didn't clock that.
But just, there are some music choices, and the dinky, like, toy box, like music when Natalie Portman comes on screen, but they're, like, panning up her body.
Yeah.
He's exploring the taste of her, arousal, so accurate. He sets off the beauty in her. He's Venus. He's a boy.
Oh my god.
His wicked sense of humor suggests exciting sex. His fingers, they focus on her and touches. He's Venus as a, like, this song is not okay, and they're putting this over actual living, breathing child is Natalie Portman.
The choice to put her in a tank top, no bra, was definitely a choice.
Yeah.
She's 13 years old, dog. Like,
which,
oh my god.
The things like the music and the costuming in the American version feel like they could maybe be intentional to be like, okay, we're establishing her character that she really wants to act older, right?
Yeah.
And that we're just establishing her as this kind of like naive, but then you learn and you're like, oh, so it's like the actual filmmakers were the ones sexualizing her. Because for me, like the sexualization of a younger person on film can usually be like explained through the punishment of the characters who are sexualizing them, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So if something gross is happening to a young person in the film, hopefully in that same film, the person who is the perpetrator kind of gets theirs at some point, and we can sort of feel gratified as an audience, or at least it's exposed, right, that they're being a fucking creep. But it's like, in this situation, it's not anyone in the movie, it's the literal filmmaker who's doing it.
It just leaves you feeling so disgusting and dirty.
Which, it does remind me of, like, the Lolita situation.
Yeah.
I've never seen the Stanley Kubrick one. I've never seen any of the movies, but I know in the book, it's, like, the main character, it's from the point of view of the pedophile, and he basically openly admits to being, he says, I'm manipulative, I'm a predator, I'm a bad person, and the book addresses that very blatantly. There's no ambiguity that this situation is bad throughout this whole thing. And this movie, I'm like, okay, you're gonna paint it as this, like, doomed love story, as this, like, you know, they're, like, two fated souls twisting in this situation, but they could never be together because of this thing that's, like, dividing them. Because you're adding some ambiguity to it, and there should be no ambiguity about a child and an adult being together.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's...
Yeah. Ooh. And it's, the thing about it is, no one says anything. No one in the movie says anything. I mean, Danny, what's his name?
Aiello? Danny Aiello?
You can obviously see his character is really uncomfortable with it. And like, hey, this feels wrong and weird. And he kind of assumes that, like, the worst of, like, Leon in that way, which, again, we see that it's not that for him. But, like, he doesn't ever say anything.
Yeah, he is.
Bro, if your homie starts hanging out with a 14-year-old girl, say something to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, like, not to be, like, hashtag all men, you know, not to reject onto men, but I think a really revealing way to know about men and how they're, like, deeply shittier than you might be led to believe is what their friend's behavior that they excuse, right? Mm-hmm. You might think he's a really nice guy and he seems super chill and above board on all the things, but if he doesn't say something when his friends say shitty shit, do shitty shit, that's, you're just as bad. And that's, I feel like, the bystander of, like, oh, I suddenly am losing a lot of respect for you because you're just, like, really passively letting this happen.
Yeah.
That's a red flag. But yeah, Danny Aiello is the only adult who ever adults even a little bit in this entire movie. Yeah. When at the very end, she's like, but I want to be a hitman. And he's like, go to school.
Shut the fuck up, yeah.
He like yells at her. He's like, here's $100. Get the fuck out of here. Go to school. Like, I'm not taking anything else I'm as an answer. Shit, yeah. And I was like, thank God. Fucking finally. I was trying to think of an intro that, like, said something about the mob wife aesthetic, because that's, like, really popping off on TikTok right now. It's, like, I was like, how do I relate, like, the mob wife aesthetic to introducing Jen? But there's really nothing mob about you. No. You might be, like, the anti-mob wife. You're, like, the mom wife aesthetic. like, the opposite. the only part of the mob wife aesthetic that appeals to me is, like,
suits, right?
In The Sopranos.
The clothes.
Oh, well, I do like the tracksuits, but I like in The Sopranos when they just get to sit in the Italian restaurant all day and they just keep bringing them out, like, free appetizers. Yep. And they, like, drink their little martinis and, like, eat calamari all day because they, like, you know, they, like, know a guy. I'm like, that's all I want. I want a booth. I want to be, like, a booth wife, you know?
Calamari and cannoli.
Yeah.
Yes. With, like, what's, like, a nice Italian cocktail? Yeah, like a limoncello or something. Just a... whatever. But anyways, that was awful. Awful segue. Jen is here to do Chocolate or Vanilla, her interim podcast segment. She says two things. We're all going to say which one we like better. A, hi, Jen, how are you? And B, is there a theme this week?
A, I am really good. And B, there kind of is. So I've been taking a lot of long car rides lately, and I had the music vibe. So I'm going to do songs. And I started with the year 2000 and went to 2019. So,
okay.
So we're gonna kind of go chronologically up through the through the 2000s. So chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Vanilla.
Chocolate. So from 2000, Drops of Jupiter by Train or Get Your Freak On by Missy Elliott.
I learned recently that Drops of Jupiter by Train is about his mom who has cancer. And it's, like, it's about his slowly dying mother, which is so sad. So now I'm never going to listen to that song and not be so depressed. So I'm going to pick Get Your Freak On by Missy Elliott. Sorry about your mom, Train, but that song is so sad now.
As much as I love Get Your Freak On, I used to love Drops of Jupiter as a kid. And I remember it being one of the first, like, songs I knew all the words to. So I'll have to go with that one.
But I love the song Drops of Jupiter. I am going to have to re-listen to it with the sad...
Yeah, and cry.
...vibes, yeah. next one. Hot in Here by Nelly or Crazy in Love by Beyoncé.
Just those that first, like, three bars of It's Hot in Here by Nelly is, like, playing in my mind right now. so good. It's hot, and so I gotta pick that. Both are fire, though.
Yeah, I think, though, what song I would be more likely to, like, get caught speeding and crash my car to would be Crazy in Love. So I'm gonna rock with that one.
I'm gonna go with Hot in Here by Nelly. Next one, Hey Ya by Outkast or Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani.
Hey Ya by Outkast is scientifically proven to be the greatest recorded song of all time. No flaws. Perfect. Hype, high energy, all of it.
That's someone who bobbed their ass off.
Yeah, right? Hey Ya by Outkast, name me a better song. You can't. It's...
Can't be done. So I'm going to agree with you there, Hey Ya.
Yeah, Hey Ya for the sweep. Mm-hmm. Next one. So You Had a Bad Day? Or Umbrella.
Oh, Umbrella by Rihanna. That is a good... Also, what song did they mash that Singing in the Rain / Umbrella on Glee? That was one of my most played. I loved that little mashup.
Was that on Glee, or are you thinking of the Tom Holland lip sync?
No, it was totally on Glee.
Glee did it first. But also the Tom Holland lip sync to that really, like, that did change something in me in whatever year that came out, 2017. That was a big one for me.
Yeah, I know it was. What was the other option besides Umbrella?
So You Had a Bad Day.
Oh, it's got to be Umbrella.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with So You Had a Bad Day, because they used to play that when they kicked someone off of American Idol.
Yes.
Oh, Sanjaya. Sanjaya, when are you going to come on the pod, bro? Yeah.
Actually, sadly, Mandisa died yesterday. Remember her? Yeah. So sad. Just, wow, this part, the theme is death. Just like, you can edit that. Next one is No One by Alicia Keys or Poker Face, Lady Gaga.
Oh. Ooh, Poker Face, Lady Gaga. If we're building up into the 2000s, yeah. Lady Gaga. No One by Alicia Keys is one that you, like, try to sing in the car and you're like, ooh, if I'm going to be punished in hell, they're going to play me back a recording of my isolated vocals of me trying to do that. And, like, yeah, that's going to be bad. But I'll pick Miss Lady Gaga, because she was, like, the first pop girly, I think, that was, like, really impactful to, like, you know, you watching her, like, rise to stardom as a young person that I can remember. Like, I feel like she's our generation's, like, Madonna or Britney.
Absolutely. As much as Madonna hates to hear it, but, like, did you see that video of her going around performing at Lollapalooza in, like, 2009? And she's on, like, the smallest stage.
Yes.
Ass crack hanging out. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I gotta go Poker Face. I'm a big Lady Gaga fan. Yeah.
It's crazy that you pulled 2009 out of your pocket, because that is the exact year of Poker Face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to pick my girl Alicia Keys, though. I love Alicia Keys. She's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Next one is Dynamite by Teo Cruz or Rolling in the Deep by Adele.
Oh, two really good picks from this time of my life. I remember I was, like, specifically in definitely, like, sixth grade. In this moment, I'm gonna pick. Why did Rolling in the Deep just have like a grip on just everyone? Dynamite by Teo Cruz was fire, but I was never one of the kids who, like, went to the dances. Like, I never went to the church basement dances, so I didn't really have.
God.
I had no use for that.
That was more LMFAO.
Yeah, right. But I'll pick Adele, because I heard somebody recently, like, say that you can't compare Taylor Swift to another artist if the thought of her singing their music is, like, actually embarrassing. So, like, somebody comparing Taylor Swift to Adele is like, think about Taylor Swift trying to sing any Adele song. That's so sad. Like, no. So just end your comparison there, buddy.
I'm also gonna have to go Adele on this one. I didn't really listen to her last album, but I mean, 21 is a fucking all-around fabulous record.
Yeah, and also Glee covered that too, of course.
That's a great mashup.
Yeah.
Wait, no, is it that? Was it Rolling in the Deep? What's the one that I'm thinking of? Santana and Mercedes and Britney in...
They were in, like, the girls' side group.
Yeah, the girls' group. What is it? Someone Like You and...
Yes.
Rumor Has It.
Yeah, that shit was gas, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now it's going to drive me crazy what the name of their group was. next one is Call Me Maybe or Radioactive by Imagine Dragons.
Oh, fuck Imagine Dragons. I cannot think of anything worse. The way Outkast is statistically the best song ever, anything by Imagine Dragons is statistically made for a department store.
Yep.
I just can't. I cannot put up with that. What was my first choice, though?
Call Me Maybe.
Oh, Miss Carly Rae. I agree with the tweet I saw recently that Carly Rae Jepsen is the perfect level of famous, that she has a very niche, dedicated fan base who go to her shows and support her to the point where she can continue to make music, tour, and sell albums, but nobody knows anything about her personal life. She will not get stopped in public. She can do whatever the fuck she wants and no one cares. That's kind of perfect. She's kind
ideal.
She's, like, kind of rocking it.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of these songs are, like, irritating to me, though. You know what I mean? I guess I'll go Call Me Maybe, because I'd rather pick a woman over a man.
I am going to go with Carly Rae. And then she had, she did the theme song for the MTV reality show Siesta Key.
No idea.
Cut to the feeling, and they would show them all, like, they were all these rich kids, you know, they'd show them, what's it called when you wakeboarding and stuff like that. Yeah, to that song. But that's not the song. It's Call Me Maybe. Next one is I'm So Fancy by Iggy Azalea. Or Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay.
These are both rough. But Iggy Azalea is, like, pretty questionable in the whole, like, black scent cultural appropriation sphere, right? I never really, like, read too deep into that, but it did always just seem like people who were criticizing her seemed kind of right. But I don't know enough about it to, like, have my own opinion. But I'm like, yeah, that seems kind of questionable. And she's always just like, I'm Australian. And I'm like, I don't think that that excuses any of that. I don't think that means that you can have cornrows. Like, man.
Truly.
Not chill. But what was the other choice? Sorry.
Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay.
Oh, I mean, at least there's instructions to that dance. You can't mess it up. Like,
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go Iggy on that one because I think that Fancy is at least a song. The other one's just not, like, a real song to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with them. Next one is Panda. Or Love Yourself by Bieber.
Oh, Panda.
Remember Panda?
Oh my god, Panda. Why did that unlock something deep and sinister in my brain? Although I was only a believer for a very short moment in time, I will not deny it that I was a JB fan for a hot minute there. I quickly grew out of it, but I will stand by the Biebs.
I will not. I have never liked Justin Bieber. I think he's pretty gross, pretty shitty dude, and he goes to that really spooky evangelical church. Mm-hmm. I am of the opinion that him and Haley were matched up through their church.
Oh, yes. No, and I've read into it that he was supposed to be with someone else, and she, and, like, that they backed out at the last minute, and she was, like, the alternate, because, like, you know, her family donated less money to the church than this other, you know, whatever other famous family. And they literally, like, wed her off to him. Yeah. I totally believe that shit. Yeah.
I hate Justin Bieber, so I will go with, Panda.
Well, I hate him for all those things you guys are saying, but we did have a Bieber phase in our house. So I'm going to go with Bieber. Last one. Havana by Camila Cabello.
Oh, flop. Sorry.
Old Town Road by Lil Nas X.
Oh, and a star, a flop, and then a one-hit wonder that we all thought would stay that way, and yet he overcame it. I will always. Lil Nas, I saw him perform once, and he only had the one song, so he just came on and did the one song, and then he left, and it was, honestly, it was awesome.
Fabulous. Loved it.
Love that. Camila Cabello can fucking suck my left nut. She fucking sucks. Her music sucks. She's a flop. Her new rebrand that she's doing is stupid. And I'm annoyed.
They need to drop her so fast.
Like, I'm so annoyed every time I see her. So. Yeah.
I almost prefer JoJo Siwa's rebrand to hers.
Oh my god.
but yeah, I'll go Lil Nas X on this one. I just saw a video of the reaction when Lana Del Rey brought Camila Cabello out onto the Coachella stage this weekend. And there was a collective, like, aww from the audience.
I will also go with Old Town Road. So that's it for I was in the mood to talk about 2000 music. Songs.
Slay. Love. Alternate theme, death. You know, we love to find a through line. A really uplifting chocolate or vanilla and an otherwise pretty depressing episode of the podcast. Thank you, Jen, as always, for being here. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll see you next week.
Love you. Have a good night.
Bye, Jen. Bye. Hi. What did you think about Natalie as the precocious child? Because I know you have a real issue with it. But yeah, I feel like it was, this might not have pissed you off as much.
Yeah, because she also wasn't so precocious as she was. She was making as many mistakes as she was being wise beyond her years, right? She has her moments where she's like, ooh, I'm the smart little girl who's gonna weasel my way into this situation, and ooh, I'm gonna really figure it out. But then she also is making these huge blunders where she is trying to act so much older, and it's obviously not working, like in the dress-up scene, right? It's like, she's making a fool of herself. So it's less precocious to me than it is more like that she is just this complicated and, like, unfigured out person, which that's how a real 12-year-old is. And I think her performance in this was great. It's really unfortunate. She has come forward in recent years and been like, yeah, she's like, I'm really grateful for that movie for giving me my big start. But she's like, that was, you know, made me feel, like, really insecure about my own sexuality and my body and myself. She's like, I really, from that moment on, only felt like I could take roles that were really serious, where I was being portrayed as very, like, respectable. She's like, because being sexualized in that way made me feel like I wasn't worthy of respect.
Yeah.
So she's like, so as a very, you know, young teen, feeling that way about yourself, like, no young teenager should have to think that, like, meta, right, about, like, just your own body and what you're going through. And especially as a young actor, you're being put, you know, on a screen in front of people. So she said that she, you know, she says she doesn't regret it, but that she certainly has some qualms about it now. She also called the film cringe, which I really like. She's like, love. She's like, you watch it now, it's a little cringe. And the film, the director, he like did a response that basically was like, well, times change, like social norms are very fluid and
literally die.
Right? Say social norms are fluid. That's why it was fine for me to make my pedophilic movie. Like, oh, so nasty. Just
God.
Disgusting. But I am, like, proud that she has said something,
at least
is feels comfortable enough in her position as a fucking top-tier A-list celebrity to be like, yeah, that wasn't chill, and I felt weird about it, and as a young kid, that wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
Because I think establishing that is, like, hopefully less kids get into those kind of situations, right, where they're... Because you can have a film where a young kid plays a really serious role.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't traumatize them for life, right? Like, if it's a good, healthy work environment, you know, you've got set coordinators and therapists and, you know, people around.
It's just really sad to think that, like, her parents were on set for all of that. You know what I mean? And I have a feeling that the conversation that went down was that they gave her more of a choice to do it or not to do it, and she probably didn't understand the kind of implications of what doing a movie that had these... this tonality about it, which just really sucks. And like you said, like, she doesn't regret it. That's fine for her. But I just feel really bad for her as an actress in that way. And it really does piss me off that knowing that she felt like she couldn't do any, like, silly movies or stupid movies. Because I think Natalie Portman is so funny. One of my favorite SNL sketches is her rap that she did, like, 10 years ago or something like that.
I've never seen this. I'll have to look at it.
It's hilarious. Well, it was, like, a Lonely Island one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And she had just, I think, finished, like, law school or whatever. She was in her, like, really short hair era. And she just is, like, playing it really aggressive, and, like, defending the Star Wars prequels. It's just, it's very funny.
Oh, yes, Padme, I get it.
Truly.
No, I love that. But I do think about how, like, that response that she had of, like, I felt like I had to behave in this very, like, uptight, serious way in order to be respected after this movie. I'm like, damn, girl, you didn't have to go to law school about it, right? Like, you didn't have to, like, Harvardify yourself to, like, be respected.
I'm interested. I really wish I knew what classes she took and what, like, her concentration and everything was. And, I mean, because I'm sure that her experience in the industry definitely shaped that, so...
Hopefully, like, media law, so that she can, like, be her own entertainment lawyer or something. Like, hopefully something that actually paid off. Hopefully she's not, like, a, like, divorce lawyer or something. Like, that would be so, like, what?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, The Milk.
Oh, yeah. I didn't love that. It's tired and played out.
Yeah, it is. I have a Letterboxd playlist called Menacing Milk, and it's every time, the trope is used that the evil guy, you know, drinks the milk, because it's so, overdone, and I'm like, why? And it's, the explanation is just as simple, it's just that, like, oh, milk is very pure and childlike, so to have an evil character drink it is, like, very juxtaposing, and it's like, you know, milk can curdle and turn bad, and I'm like, what, then why, I'm like, I don't want to watch someone drink 8 glasses of whole milk in a row.
Do apple juice or something.
My stomach was turning. The part where she was like, can we do something different today? And he's like, no, drink your milk. I'm like, she's fighting for her life in the bathroom. Like, little Natalie Portman weighs 73 pounds and you're making her drink a gallon of milk a day. Dude, she's blasting. Like, the milk of it all was, I was just like, can we just pick, like, a cooler symbolism to do? I don't know.
I would have them drinking Capri Suns.
Oh, pounding those little jug juices. Pounding, yeah. Those. Mm-hmm. Or like the Kool-Aid with the nipple top. That would have been really on brand for this.
Love that one. Yeah. See, what would be even more menacing is if someone got, you know, the like ice pops that are in plastic.
Oh,
and you freeze
them.
Don't freeze them and you just shoot them.
Oh, that sounds, that, like, gave me a cavity, like, just thinking about that liquid. What do you call those things?
I call them freeze pops.
I think I also call them freeze pops, but if somebody called it an ice pop, I would know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
It's like an American regional thing, where in other parts of the country, they call them some whack shit, like,
yeah.
I don't even, off the top of my head, I don't even know, but, yeah, those little,
it's like,
those,
the way that is so regional.
It's, like, all over they call them different things, but it's, like, I don't know, man, that's an ice pop. Like,
yeah,
like a freezy. They call it a freezy somewhere. I'm, like, I don't know. If you were, like, do you want a freezy, I would assume you were handing me, like, a slushy. Or, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I also thought that, like, when they were up, like, practicing with the long-range gun, I don't know anything about guns.
Sniper?
When they were, like, the sniper, I guess.
Yes.
The one with the little telescope.
A sniper.
When they were up on the roof and he was like, okay, do a practice hit. But obviously we don't know until after that it was fake.
I did really like that scene.
So that one, though, when she does it, I'm like, JFK. I'm like, they show who she shoots and it's John F. Kennedy. They're in Dallas. I wanted that turn, you know. Rewind. It's the 60s. Who was her first kill? She was the second shooter.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That could have been kind of fierce.
That would have been a way better movie.
I really liked this, like, super niche, I don't even know if it was, like, a Hulu show or, like, an Amazon, some random streaming platform made a TV show of a Stephen King book that was, like, about who the second shooter was, and it was, like, James Franco time travels to, like, stop the JFK assassination.
Oh, my
literally
God.
Nobody but me has ever watched this show. Uh-huh. Nobody but me knows what I'm talking about, but it's all about, like, you know, the grassy knoll. I don't know. I had a weird JFK who the second shooter phase was for, like, a
minute. I was gonna say.
It was during the pandemic. I was, like, listening to a lot of JFK podcasts, and then I was like, wait, I don't care about this. I was like, I actually, the only person who wants to talk to you about that is, like, the worst guy you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to talk to
or
anyone
your grandpa.
About JFK. Yeah, like, literally, like, your Republican grandpa who cares a little bit too much about the JFK assassination. Uh-huh. I dropped that. But there's a good Netflix series about how Matilda is the second shooter, if you want to check it out. With other Love known that. Piece of shit, James Franco.
Yeah. Do you want to get into our regularly scheduled programming?
Yes, I'll just drop as my last piece of fact as I'm looking at my notes, the Me Too, like the Me Too movement, the hashtag that they use for that in France, in French, obviously, translates to expose your pig. And I just thought that was
I love that.
I was like, Me Too is fine, but I'm like, we should ramp it up to, I like expose your pig. Like, that's a little hitting harder.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I was reading about, you know, the whole truth of it all in the situation, that there was a bit about, like, French age of consent laws and stuff, and a lot of the fuck shit that happens in their, you know, Hollywood or, you know, media movie making stuff. Like it's fucked everywhere, mm-hmm. but expose your pig. Let's bring that hashtag to America. Cause mm-hmm. let's make these men accountable for their actions.
Please.
Cause Natalie Portman shouldn't have to feel gross about herself for a decade for a movie she was in with a bunch of men who didn't have to feel bad about anything ever.
Yep, exactly.
But I had kind of a tough time with food and drink for this movie because I really was just, like, feeling, like, sick. I was like, this is, like, making my skin crawl and, like, I do not want to be eating. I certainly don't want to be drinking milk. That's for fucking sure.
No.
And I was trying to, like, think of something that was French but was trying to be Italian.
Mm.
Like, what is, like, a French food that is, like, trying to mask at... And, like, what's, like, a French pasta dish? But I'm like, I don't know enough about cuisine to really...
Yeah, I couldn't say.
To really tell you. But I also... This is really awful, but I was like, what is the most, like, pedophilic drink? And I was like, wine coolers.
No, literally.
Like, hey, come back. We'll buy you wine coolers. And then I was like, that's awful. That's awful thing to say.
That's pretty bad.
So I do... I think you should have a nice glass of ice water.
Yeah.
And then maybe just, like, kill yourself or something. I don't know. Just, like, maybe, like, donate to a nice charity. I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Because I had a plate of nachos in front of me while I watched this. And I was like, I can't eat this. Like, yeah. I was feeling too icky.
Yeah, I believe it.
So, like, a nice, like, a big ice water. Uh-huh. What about you? I know that's, like, an awful answer.
So I didn't have any issues with Leon as a character, personally. So I said, what do I want to feed him? And I'll feed myself. I think, like, a nice, like, sort of zucchini-stuffed shell sounds Ooh. Really good. I love okay. a stuffed shell. And I think that's what Danny's character would make for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you do that. And then... limoncello, like, out of the little glass.
Yeah.
You can make a spritzer if you want, but I think you need to get, like, really drunk to watch this movie, and then get mad about it and then smash your TV.
Yeah, right.
Or write, like, a really angry letter to, like, some French official saying how they need to arrest Luc Besson.
Ugh, like, so icky. And the thing that it started to make me feel even more icky afterwards, right, was knowing that I had previously liked this movie and was a part of a group of people who just didn't know any better, right? And you go on Letterboxd and there are all these 4 or 5 star reviews of people who are making great points about why this is a really cool and fun movie. But I'm like, I'm like, I need to...
Not
like,
anymore.
I'm, like, individually DMing, like, getting, you know, after 3 glasses of wine, when I just start DMing anyone, mm-hmm. I'm sending links to articles to strangers,
yep.
just,
yeah.
like, hey, just so you know.
just to make you aware.
And then to follow this movie up, you could obviously just watch Matilda, a movie about a child who is treated with respect and dignity and,
uh-huh.
you know, all that good stuff. But I do think a movie about a father-daughter duo where he trains her to be an assassin, that it is a fun dynamic, is a Kick-Ass.
Oh, love that.
Yeah, with Nicolas Cage and little Chloe Grace Moretz. And I think that movie's just a lot of fun. And I needed a little breath of fresh air of something after watching this. Because I was like, ooh.
I agree with you there. And I'm going to counter Kick-Ass with Nice Guys.
Uh-huh, yep.
With another precocious child. And Ryan Gosling's screams.
That movie is, like, in a weird part of, like, a void of my mind that I always forget about it, and then uh-huh. somebody will post something, and I'm like, oh, fuck, like, does that
and
exist?
I liked that movie.
I'm like, was it a fever dream that I had, or, like...
We watched it very drunk after podcasting one time,
mm-hmm.
so...
But it's, like, I always just, like, that, it just gets wiped from, it's like learning the rules to a card game. Like, I learn
yeah.
them, and I can do it, and then it just goes out the window, and the next
Forever.
Time I have to do
yeah.
it, I'm like, I simply don't recall.
Teach me? Yeah.
But, and then, out of 10, I have to just, like, give it the nooch, right? Like,
yeah.
it's just fucked. It's,
Big
is it the...
Egg.
And this was, Henry notably gives every movie 5 stars on Letterboxd.
This is the one that at first didn't pass.
no, he says everything is pass-fail, and he's like, oh, the lowest you can do is a half star? No, I can't even do that. He's like, no rating. He's like, only review, no rating. Yeah, fail.
Exactly.
He said, every movie is a 5 or 0. There's no, it's a yes, no, it's a pass, fail. So this is our first on the books, Henry Fail, which I'm like, yeah, that checks.
Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, sorry that this episode was kind of a bummer this week. I wasn't intending it for it to go so south, but
I'm tasking all of you out there to be missionaries and spread the word that this is a fucked movie.
Yeah. Like, the untold truth of Leon the Professional. Because I would say, like, maybe people around the time it came out, like, knew about it. Like, yeah. But, like, certainly, I think enough time has passed that people are just sort of, like, have swept it under the rug. Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure Luc Besson is still, like, making films and shit. Oh, yeah. I know he has a production company that Netflix bought. Like, Netflix bought out his production company or something. So I don't know if he's still, like, working in the Netflix sphere, if he's doing his own thing. I don't really know. But he deserves to be blacklisted the same way that the Harveys, you know. And
absolutely. Yeah. I clicked international version, thinking there wasn't going to be that much of a difference. It was going to be some extra action scenes or a couple little interactions that weren't entirely important to the plot. But no, it was the whole plot.
Yeah, it was those 20 minutes really made a world of a difference.
Yes.
And you don't go watch this movie. You don't have to. Don't if you've seen the original, don't even go watch the international one to like educate yourself.
Don't give any more money to whoever has that.
Yeah, you can also just, like, I don't know, read. There are YouTube videos that, like, show. You don't even have to. Yeah. The scenes are fucking gross, too, and not good.
Yeah.
So it's not even.
Go read about it somewhere.
But is the theme of this month first performances, or is it Bob's?
We might change it to Bob's.
We'll find out next week. Is next week this month or next month? Let me look at a calendar.
Oh, I think it's next month.
No! Next month is a different theme, so.
Fuck!
I totally forgot. So next month we'll be doing a May pun that we still have yet to decide. So send in your last minute May requests. In the past, we have done Ewan May, Gregor, Paul Mayno, and Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be doing another actor May pun month. So keep your ears open for that. Also, go check out our episode last week. We had some guests from the Pop Culture Vultures podcast. They were great, and we're gonna go be on their show, so keep your eyes out for that. We'll post links in the descriptions and on our socials and stuff, but sometime in upcoming weeks, we're pretty pumped for that. And as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for sending in your questions, comments, concerns, movie suggestions, all of it to our social media, our email. All of our stuff is in the description. Mm-hmm. You know what to do. You know the drill. Also, Patreon stuff this month. That's going to happen at some point. So if you're listening and you're like, hey, where's my bonus episode?
Sorry, it's coming. Emily just has to find time to go see Monkey Man. So.
Emily just has to get her ass up and go to work. Nobody wants to work these days and go see a movie for our podcast that we don't make any money from. And I'm just going to leave you with a little smooch. And goodbye, good night, and we love you.